This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV podcast number 9. I've got some interesting stuff to discuss this week. We're doing this slightly earlier than we did last week, so it means I'm more comfortable talking about the previous game, which is good because it was a good win against the Baggies. But yeah, before we do though, Chris, I want to kick us off with a question from Richard Daniel, who says, who is your favourite of the Liverpool celebrity fan? It's interestingly phrased. Who's your favourite celebrity Liverpool fan?
Are you pointing me towards you here, Paul? You know, I like you more than most
know.
People.
Well, it's good to know. But no, I'm not in the slightest.
Because they didn't say whether it was A-list or Z-list.
That's true.
So it's you.
Oh, that's really creepy. I honestly thought you would have gone with Daniel Craig.
No, not Daniel Craig, no.
Is that because you don't like him as Bond?
No, I just don't really like him, never mind Bond. No, I don't know, it never really seems to bother me. I mean, Samuel L. Jackson is probably up there, to be honest with you.
That's the correct answer, isn't it?
And then Mike Myers. I like Mike Myers.
Myers is who I would have gone for because of the whole Wayne's World inspiration of Red Men TV and what have you. Interestingly enough, when Mike Parry
really
did that kickoff.
Yeah, though, do you?
Nah. I don't know, I don't not care.
I do not care.
Yeah, when Mike Parry was kicking off about James Bond being a Liverpool fan, and it was not written by Ian Fleming as a Liverpool fan, I didn't see him mentioning that Austin Powers wasn't written as a Liverpool fan. That's double standards, Mike
didn't
Parry.
Didn't Mike Myers write Austin Powers, so technically he could have been a Liverpool fan.
Could have been, but he also...
It was back when Liverpool used to win trophies as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, there you go, let us know your favourite Liverpool celebrity fan. Before we crack on, actually, we always do this at the end of the podcast, we always promise to do it at the start. If you enjoy the Red Men TV podcast, if you like it,
Paul,
please do leave it a rating and a review. And what we're going to do from next week, as we haven't prepared it for this week, is we're going to start reading the best reviews out on the podcast from next week. So yeah, leave us a review on iTunes, and I don't know if you can do it on any other podcasting app, but it can't hurt if you do it there.
We'll
read through your reviews next week. So yes, Chris Pajak, Liverpool beat West Brom.
I thought we were going to get the questions from there as well, the questions from the reviews.
That's news to me.
Yeah, I think that's what we decided as well. Okay. I think we should.
Well, it sounds like almost certain, like we didn't decide it because
we
have
just decided it.
Books out, okay. Whatever. We'll if people write interesting things in the reviews, we'll read them. If people write nothing, then we'll read nothing. And we'll continue.
How many people are going to type the word nothing?
Now?
I would.
Yeah, now? Well, we're not, whatever. Do it, write nothing. You know what I mean? But the word nothing, not nothing. Yeah. Also, if you want to watch, if you're ever wondering what we do during the dead air on this show, you can watch on the redmentv.com the video version of this, which is extended normally by about 10 to 15 minutes with some more of your questions at the end. Go and watch that. Go and subscribe. Yada, yada. So we move on. Yes.
For any of you listeners who are wondering, we do have an ongoing hour-long game of rock, paper, scissors. Okay, we don't.
Really?
But sign
you'll
up
never
anyway.
Know. You'll never know. There's people in people writing reviews going, they don't. I watched the video version and they don't. Liars.
We should do, though.
We should do. But we're not going to.
Come on, Paul.
1, 2, 3. No, that's not how you play rock, paper, scissors. Well, okay. Failed. Well done.
Okay.
West Bromwich Albion at the weekend. 1, 2, 3. In your face. So, West Bromwich Albion at the weekend. If you want to know who won that, well, I mean, I've pretty much given it away, but do watch the video version. Yeah, kind of. I feel like we're going to be saying this a lot between now and the end of the season, provided we win these games, of course. But hard fought win, great 3 points, feeling ultimately very satisfied with life off the back of it. I feel like I don't want to get too carried away with it at this point. I was really enjoying it yesterday and obviously on the Sunday, but I do feel like we're starting to get into this. We're well in the grind now, aren't we? And I'm very much of like, that was a nice 3 points. It would have been a lot easier if more teams around us had dropped points, but doesn't it mean that more rides on next week and the week after and the week after?
Yeah, I think I love this part of the season, to be honest. This is the part of the season that we're not normally involved in. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been far too few years where, with 5 games to go, you're looking up and down the table wondering, oh, well, if this happens and this happens, yeah, what does that mean for us and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm at the point where I'm looking at goal difference with Man United because the Man United result has tinted the West Brom result at the weekend for me slightly because...
Because they went plus one. Well, they got one. They clawed a goal back on us in goal difference terms.
Two, wasn't it?
We got plus one. Didn't they win 2-0?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Yeah. So one, but more from the fact that, you know, they're 6 points behind us and the fact that they won. The goal difference has come off the back of that.
Yeah.
But the fact that they won and won convincingly against Chelsea in a game that I earmarked is a tough one between two Anderlecht ones.
So we were sat here 2 weeks ago looking at that.
Exactly. And you look at it and you think, wow, what a performance by Manchester United. And that really puts the pressure on us even more so now. I was hoping that us getting the victory before they kicked off would have really messed with their heads. And it looks like Mourinho, first and foremost, got his tactics spot on against Chelsea.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they man-marked Eden Hazard and you know, Herrera completely pocketed him, just took him out of the game completely. We discussed, I don't know whether it was last week on any of our shows, but we were discussing in the office certainly this idea that Mourinho has often found the game plan and shown people the way to play against teams. Now, will that mess up Chelsea's chances? Who knows? But what it does mean is that Manchester United are hot on our tails. They're 5 goals behind us in goal difference. Now, 2 games in hand, it's conceivable that they can get their level or go ahead of us with a couple of good victories. And, you know, this is the great part of the season. And it's going to be difficult, Flip, but we need to keep grinding these results out. But I think we've shown over the last week and a half that we are up to the challenge.
What was great about the most encouraging thing about the West Brom one is that we've had too many times this season where we get a good result and you think, that's it, we've proven we can do something. And then the next week we don't back it up. Mm. We don't do it, or we don't continue that momentum. And although this was very much, this was a different win. It was a completely different win and achieved in a completely different way to the Stoke one. It, for me, it did that. I think it gives the team confidence. And you talked about this, I think, on the final word about how is there a mentality there, an issue with the team, and is there a fear factor creeping into their play because they're aware of the teams around them and they're aware of the pressure of the situation. The more you start to do stuff that people don't necessarily expect you to do or whatever, the more you believe you can do it. And as I say, that's the thing. It's just a crying shame that we didn't get the 3 points against Bournemouth, because if we'd come back and won that and then we have the win against, and then that's you're almost going, all of your fears are dispelled on that, whereas the Bournemouth one lingers. But the more distance we put between us and that Bournemouth result, I think us as fans and us and them as the players will think, yeah, this is fine. This is absolutely in our control.
This is what I think footballers don't realise more than anything else. And one of the reasons that I think the media affects them so much is that footballers don't realise that they're the authors of their own stories. Mm. You know, so
the
many...
Authors?
The authors of their own stories. And I think one of the... What I mean by that is, you know, journalists write on what they see.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Liverpool can't play like this. Liverpool need this player. Liverpool struggle against blah, blah, blah. Just go out there and prove that you don't.
Mm.
And they will write the story. The story after the West Brom game was Liverpool win ugly.
Yeah.
You know, they can do it. And that's what Liverpool players and you know, Premier League players all around the country need to remember, that it's in their hands. It's not the authors, it's not the journalists. It makes no difference to them. They've got to go out there and prove it.
I would look at that result against a Tony Pulis side and think how many times, and this is, you know, this is why someone like Lucas, it would definitely in his mind, because he's been here for, you know, best part of 10 years. How many games we've played against Tony Pulis and sides of that ilk, pardon me, where in the last 5 minutes of the game, we've been throwing the kitchen sink at them, trying to get that goal, trying to get ourselves back into the game. We made Tony Pulis do that. You know, we made him panic so much and be so desperate for points that he threw his fucking goalkeeper up front. If there's ever been a clearer sign that what we're doing is working, it's when managers who will always play for the draw and believe they can nick something on the counter or nick something from a set piece, if he's panicking to the point where he's letting his goalkeeper run to the point where he would take losing 2-0 or 3-0 to try and get a point. Tony Pulis in your face, mate, because that's brilliant. I can't even imagine Roy Hodgson doing it, or imagine like Sam Allardyce doing that or something like that. It'd be mind-boggling. I don't think we've even shown enough. We've said it's the least Pulis thing ever. We've done a bit on that, but when you think about it, like we've been on the receiving end of that so much, that makes me feel so happy. And again, like we said, feeds into this. Hopefully, I was like, obviously, comfort factor. I don't mean that in terms of getting lazy with it all and whatever, but it should make us all feel loads more relaxed that Liverpool actually have got a handle on this situation, for the moment at least.
Well, yeah, they did, and they've proved... I just love the fact that they went out there and they proved that they can do it, and the way in which we scored the goal is magnificent as well, because all the story was about how many goals West Brom score from set pieces and headers and all this type of stuff, and Lucas Leiva gets an assist from a set piece, and Firmino gets the goal. Yeah. And you just go, fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck off. This is Liverpool. We'll do it our way. Yeah. And if you think that we can't do it, stand up, prove it, and just go out there and be men on the football field and get the result that your team needs. And that's what we've done.
Yeah, exactly. And it is the thing that this side lacks, because you don't need those goals when you're playing free throw and attacking football and you're blitzing sides and you're 4-0 up. Who gives a shit? It's like anything. It's like having a tube of toothpaste. When you've got a fresh tube of toothpaste, you know what I mean. You've got toothpaste abandon. Whereas when you get to the end of the toothpaste and you try to wring every little single bit of it, you become more appreciative of the dregs of a roll of toothpaste, and because it's better to have toothpaste than not have toothpaste. And this is where we're at this season, is that we've just won a game with a set piece goal. You need those. You know, you can't afford to abandon those things. And it does look like it would be nice to see us again go, you know, guns free. You know, start slaughtering teams, kind of like what Spurs do at the moment. But where we are with the injuries that we've got or whatever, I'm so pleased that again we've managed to engineer a win that didn't require us to carve a team apart. It didn't require us to do this and that. No, you don't want to rely on that week in, week out. But you need that string to your bow. You need that arrow in your quiver, et cetera, et cetera. And it's something we haven't had enough of. And it shows, again, a level of tactical awareness. It shows a level of planning. It shows a level of training that's been going in around these games. And we're not... We were worried a month ago, 2 months ago, probably more, you know, coming out of January, that we're not even got the players to play when we haven't got our best players, how do we get wins? And we were really worried that we were just going to continue to plough the same field, you know what I mean, do the same shit with lessening returns. Again, another encouragement for me for the rest of the season is, you know, we've got a different tactical approach, and we're trying different stuff on the training ground as well. Puts us in good stead.
It does, and I think, you know, the point you make about the training is a really good point, because you can see clearly that this formation that we've kind of been forced into, the sort of hybrid, let's go hybrid 4-3-3, three at the back, like, the players look like they're getting more comfortable with it now, and it's a way of getting Firmino and Coutinho, we've talked about this so many times, about them getting into positions where they can affect football matches. You know, Divock Origi, I still think we're almost playing a player short.
Yeah.
We're almost playing with 10 men at times, but Divock Origi's doing enough of a job that we're managing to find a way to get victories, and, you know, whether it's set pieces, whether it's someone stepping up, like Lucas, an assist, that's more assist than Henrik Mkhitaryan this season for Lucas Leiva. I'm just going to say that there. I'm just going to say that right there. He's got two assists this season. That's more than Henrik Mkhitaryan.
That's amazing. I should have watched this back better. For the offside goal, was Origi offside or was Firmino offside?
Firmino was offside.
Sam, well, that's one of them, isn't it? Again, to Origi's credit, he's still doing reasonably the right stuff. As we said, he struggled to hold the ball up, but he got better at that as the game went on. And on another day, but barring a couple of inches and what have you, could have been on the score sheet. And you start to, his goal return for a season where he's been poor by his own standards that he set last at the back end of last season starts to look really good. And I think that's the mark of a player of talent, because here's the difference at the minute between him and Daniel Sturridge, say. And Daniel Sturridge is unquestionably an incredibly talented footballer, but he's not scoring. He's not scoring goals when he gets even his limited opportunities. So yeah, Divock Origi, you're right. He doesn't quite fit, and there is. That's it's to our credit, I think, all around that we are, as you say there, rightly getting the getting 3 points regardless. So yeah, fantastic win. We move on. Just one piece of news, obviously, that's come out sort of in the week. Again, if you watch the final word show, we'll know we did some of this, but we'll, I think it's worth picking up on the discussion because since recording then, Lucas Leiva's been interviewed or come out himself and talked about his future. And he's actually said he's got the conclusion that I think we come to ourselves in that he will sit down with the club and he'll sit down with the manager at the end of the season and work out where he stands. And I, to be honest, I love Lucas Leiva's attitude, Chris, and I love the fact that he's gone, I've got 5 games to focus on here. I'm going to focus on them. If they want me, I'll stay. If they don't, I'm not bothered. I'll go and find football. That's the end of it.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was quite that cut and dry. I think, you know, one of the things that I'd read from the quote, and I'm going to paraphrase because I can't remember it verbatim, is that he'd said playing time will be a factor in this. And this, you know, again, this is what we talked about on the final word show, is that Lucas Leiva feels that he can contribute. The words that he used were, I'm 30, I'm not 35, 36. Yeah. I still think I've got many years left at the top level. And I think that's right because, you know, Lucas Leiva...
He's not getting any slower.
He's not, but, you know, again, I've talked about this a few times, and it's an NFL thing, so I fully expect your eyes to glaze over. But Tom Brady talked about how at this age of his career, his body's the same as it was 10 years ago, but he's seen everything that anyone can throw at him now, and he's enjoying football more. And they're saying, well, when are you going to give up? Because he's nearly 40 years old, and he's like, I've seen it all. It's becoming easier for me now. Yeah. I'm not going to give up when it's just got good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've seen every defense, every pass rusher. I know exactly how everybody plays. Lucas Leiva's the same. He's been in this league for 10 years. Give or take, he knows probably he's played against 90% of the players he's going to come up against already. You know, he knows his skill set. He understands his body. It's about utilising that in a way that Liverpool can get the best out of him. He's utilised in all different positions. He has a level of experience, the squad, that we don't have without him. But, you know, he wants his game time and he feels he deserves that. And I do too.
Yeah.
You know, I love Lucas Leiva, but if he thinks I want to go, I'll back his decision.
Oh, God, absolutely.
Because that means that Liverpool don't think we're not going to be able to offer him as many games as he feels he deserves. And you know what? He's been a great servant. He's been great by all accounts with the Spanish speaking members of the squad.
Yeah.
You can see the fact that he's a captain on the field, whether he wears the armband or not. Mm-hmm. It gives his all 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's football. Sometimes it doesn't go quite as planned. Sometimes you have good days and sometimes you have bad days. On the whole, over his 10 years, he's had more good days than bad days.
He said that himself, didn't he? He said, I've had some good games in this season and I've had some bad performances. Every footballer has that. And again, it shows a mental strength that he has. And I think if you really look at Lucas, you can tell, you see, the fella is chock full of mental strength, because you'd have to be to have been at Liverpool this long.
Just to get through what he got through in his first few seasons.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, I hope in the fullness of time he'll be remembered fondly. I think he will always struggle because of he will always carry that stigma with him from the early days. And of course, Liverpool have had such a barren spell, you know, since he's been at the club. And I would genuinely like him to get it. I would like to see him have another season. Because here's the thing, he's only going to be 31. And if he believes that he's got many more years left in him, he might as well see his contract out, because I don't see that the money we're going to get from selling Lucas Leiva with a year left on his contract is the value to keeping someone like that. Even if you have to lie to him and tell him he's going to play more games than he maybe will, you never know.
Insight into your footy manager techniques.
No, true. But here's the thing, you know, you probably won't need him next season if you buy another defensive midfielder. But we also know that Liverpool have got horrific history with injuries to important players. And what if you look at us right now?
38 months of football missed this season alone on our injuries, Paul.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, and it's interesting that I think we're still around the average for the Premier League in a general sense. But the fact of the matter is, no one would have predicted Lucas getting this much game time, and he needed a centre back or DM. And the fact that he has is testament to how these things can happen. And what we were saying on the final word is, you're looking to expand your squad because there's more games to play, and you want to be playing more games at a top level. If we we would consider ourselves to be a couple of men late for what we're trying to achieve this season if we're looking to add another 15 games or whatever at a really tough competitive level. And people will be expecting, if we finish top four, people will expect more from the league as well next season. I think I can't see a world where whether we might plan for Lucas to only play. You know, I said 10, you said 5. Even if the plan is either of those figures, odds are he'll play at least that, and you would imagine more, just because, again, let's take 10 years of Lucas's career and analyse how many times we've had those deep injury
I can't remember exactly, but I think he's made 9 starts in the Premier League this season. I think he's made 24 appearances in total or something like that, just in the Premier League. So he's a guy who's been utilised a lot in many different ways as well. You know, we've talked, you know, and you mentioned it briefly there about being a DM, being a centre-back. It really depends on what Jurgen Klopp's doing with the squad. I think if there's a move towards 3 at the back, which we've seen in recent weeks, then you're going to need more centre-backs than the 4 that we're currently almost planning to have for next season. If there's going to be 3 centre midfielders, then, you know, he might be more of a centre midfielder option and stuff like that. So it really does. It's about how this squad's going to take shape and where Lucas fits into that. I'd love to see him at the club. I wonder why we're not asking these questions about James Milner at 31 now. Why Lucas at 30, the questions are being asked. Is it literally down to the fact that his contract has a year to go? Because Milner's older.
Yeah.
Milner's older, and yet we seem to be fairly comfortable with him being a first teamer next season.
But that's the point, is that he is a first teamer, isn't he? There's a difference, isn't there? Because Lucas Leiva... Well, James Milner's had opportunity and he's proved it, hasn't he? Whereas I think we'd all say that... And again, you can see the management trust as well. Lucas Leiva's never first choice in that squad. He's easily behind what Henderson and Emre Can, you'd say, whatever.
But you pop James Milner in a week ago into centre midfield.
Oh, horrendous.
He doesn't look anywhere near as good as Lucas in centre midfield.
No.
And there's a guy who's a year older. He got the nod over Lucas in that game.
Yeah.
That happened once, and Lucas came back in.
Yeah, it's true.
And puts a great performance in.
I think in some respects, Lucas Leiva's actually fallen foul of being a bit too young, because... I remember when he was injured under Brendan Rodgers and Rodgers sent him on scouting trips for them, sent him around Europe to look at players and what have you. And Lucas is a big student of the game, and it wouldn't shock me to see him go into coaching off the back of it. And Lucas Leiva's got all the hallmarks of a player who will end up back at Liverpool in years to come as an assistant manager or in a coaching role. You know how you see like Rafa always picks up someone who's relevant to a club. So you see like Bolo Zenden's gone back in coaching and that kind of stuff. It wouldn't shock me to see him there, but he could probably go away and do a few years in around the world, play, you know, get good game time in Italy or Turkey, or, you know, maybe a lower end in La Liga or something, and come back. But it's a shame, because I wouldn't mind seeing Lucas Leiva see his contract out. But the fact is, he's only going to be 31 when he sees his contract out, and it's not like, see your contract out and then move into the coaching staff. He's like, no, hang on, I've got like 4 more years left in my legs here. Oh shit. Okay, well, enjoy the next 4 years, mate. We'll see how you get on. It's a pity, because I wouldn't like us to lose what Lucas brings to the squad, that experience, that mentality, that the can-do attitude and what have you. You know, you get rid of him and you get rid of, maybe, I can't see Milner being moved on. Clavan might well go. How many players have we got who are over 30 in the squad?
It's not just, I think, when you look at Clavan and Lucas this season, they've done really good jobs, admirable jobs, in that every time they seem to start, it seems to be last minute, like last 24 hours for an injury. And there's not many players in our squad who I trust to drop in on 24 hours notice and play in a position that they're unfamiliar with. Lucas has done that brilliantly all season long. Yeah, he's had a few bad games. Everybody had bad games. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you're getting dropped into a squad with minimal notice, when the team have been training a certain way all week long, and then you're dropped in and supposed to do a job that you're not fully comfortable with, I think more often than not, he's done a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with that. So yeah, obviously more on that as it follows. I know the bare minimum, I'd like to see him get a testimonial, because I don't see that we'll be seeing him. He could be the last ever testimonial, you know what I mean, the last ever Liverpool player testimonial, which would be a shame. So moving ahead then, Palace this weekend. I've got it here, because the grind continues. I don't see there's any other way to look at it. Crystal Palace have developed a habit, especially against us, but, you know, I think as evidenced by recent weeks and some of the performances they put in, they can beat teams better than them in the league.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't shock me to see them give us a really good game.
I'm tempted to put money on Benteke scoring a one-on-one.
I feel like there's going to be one of them moments in the game, but I
could you imagine the fume if he scores a one-on-one against us?
I could see that situation being presented, and what will I think like our season will hinge on whether he takes it or misses it. Because if he misses it, we'll all go, oh yeah, you see, we knew this is what he couldn't do. But if he scores it, you're right. Social media explode, heads pop left, right, and centre. Yeah, it's I really hope not. But
a request, I bet.
Well,
definitely.
God.
Just to stop it from happening.
But it's
I'll put all my money on it.
What a potential here? I don't necessarily want
Are they the same side without Sacco?
Are they the same side without Sacco? We won't know, will we? Until we see.
From earlier on in the season, they're not.
Well, it's true. You know, there's a direct correlation between them not being shit and them having Mamadou Sacco in the centre half. That's good. You know, I think Scott Dan's injured as well, isn't he?
Oh, lovely.
I don't know. I know he got a bad injury a couple of weeks ago. I've not followed them, if I'm perfectly honest. So I won't throw any money on that one. But what the interesting thing for this game is. And I'm not saying we should target these players, but Andros Townsend and Wilfred Zaha, both in pretty good form at the moment, especially Zaha. Liverpool have a tendency to come up against teams like this in seasons, and one player. No, I always go back to the Birmingham Cup game where Jermaine Pennant was their best player by an absolute mile, and everyone was like, "Yeah, great, get him," and we got him, and we were happy, and then he was never that good. But you know, it wouldn't shock me to see someone like that who you could. Don't be surprised if we're having the conversation next week. Oh, would you take a punt on Zaha? Because. Quite frankly, in his current form, yeah, God, I think he looks he's back to looking like the kind of player that was supposed to hit the heights when he went to Man United. And they're players to be feared because it's an Allardyce side. We're talking about them being defensive, compact. They've got that front three.
Pace on the counter.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it during the West Brom game about just how easy it is to counter attack against Liverpool. One ball down the middle, a little bit of pace, and we're all at sea, aren't we? And you know, there are players around the Premier League. Crystal Palace are perfectly set up for it, and their front three can do that. You know, Benteke will hold the ball up and bring those fast players in, and then look to get into the box. And you know, I do fear that from Crystal Palace. I think that's their game plan before they've started, but. Equally, like what's happened over the last few weeks, when we've proved that we've got time to train for a side, we seem to be well equipped to deal with their sort of way of attacking us. And you know, West Brom is a good example of that. Yeah, we had a few opportunities. That happens in football again. It's a 90-minute game. West Brom are always going to get a few chances and stuff. And it's about how Simon Mignolet and the defence hold up to that front three threat.
The one thing about the Mignolet stuff, because we've done a lot on Mignolet, and rightly so, because he's been terrific by and large this season, but especially in the last few games. I also think we've kind of ridden our luck to some extent. What it would be nice to have a situation, because eventually someone's going to score in one of those chances. You know those chances that he's been pulling out, the saves he's been pulling out of his arse, out of the ether, out of the magical realm. They're not going to happen at some point.
Sorry, is that what you call the arse, the magical realm?
It depends how good. it depends how good my day's been. But it's that thing of we need to get in a situation where our 3 points are not hinged on our goalkeeper having to pull off a world class save, because that's where we have been riding the luck, and eventually that is the luck that runs out in these kind of things. We need to make sure that it's. And I said it against West Brom, we definitely got lucky, because we had that spell at the start of the second half, as we've done a lot in recent weeks. I know we've got the offside goal, but Milner misses an absolute sitter. We get a couple opportunities in and around the box. You think back to Stoke, Dejan Lovren in the crossbar with the header. We cannot afford to keep having such slender leads in games, because. Like I say, eventually it's going to lead to trouble.
I think you're right, and I think the other part of that is that I don't think we can afford to have a sloppy start again. You know, the first halves haven't been good enough over the last couple of games. You know, we've gone behind a couple of times in recent weeks. Obviously, West Brom, we managed to keep a clean sheet, but I think we're riding our luck at both ends of the pitch a little bit. And let me rephrase that. I think we're riding our luck defensively, certainly, but we need to make sure that we're putting our chances away at the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me to see them approach the game the way that Burnley have approached it, though. you know, go 15 minutes at us, stick balls into the channels, try and stretch us a little bit, flick some, get Benteke to hold up. The hope is that I could see us doing a very similar kind of thing to what we did to Lukaku and what we did to Hal Robson-Kanu, is that, you know, the pincer movement, or the Lucas Lovren sandwich. Mm. And just trying to make basically take him out the game to the best of our ability and see what we can do. But yeah, I think if we can hold firm for that first 15, where I think that's when Allardyce will take a little spin, he'll go for 15, nothing to lose. And if we can ride that out without conceding a goal, I could see us striding and growing into the game. But it would be nice.
Just the first few passes need to hit the man.
Absolutely, that'd be lovely.
That would, you know, I'm not asking for loads.
Not asking for much. But it would be lovely to not have to do what we've done and put all our eggs in the 45 to 60 minute basket in terms of trying to win a football match. It would be nice to get a goal or two in the first half.
Oh, it would. One of the things that I want to see Liverpool do, and maybe this isn't what Anfield crowd would like to see, is this pass it round from the back. Like, I know that we get very het up at Anfield and very nervous when we start to do this, but to utilise the goalkeeper, to utilise the centre-backs and the full-backs. And the reason that I think this is a good way of, I think, first of all, you're trying to draw Crystal Palace out. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I want to tire their attackers out in those first 15 to 20 minutes. So ball possession's fine for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying let's go and score two goals in the first 15. That would be lovely.
Yeah.
That would be best case scenario. But even just to get their attackers tired, running from side to side, chasing lost balls, stuff like that, I would love to do that, because second half, that does open it up a lot more. And I think it is something that we've done over the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we've had good second halves, just because we are tiring their attackers out. Press when you don't get the ball is a killer.
Yeah,
it's a killer at any level. Five aside, anything. If any, you know, anyone who just runs around, who runs around chasing the ball will know it's not only physically tiring, it's mentally tiring, and you tend to start to switch off. And that's a good way of Liverpool getting an a foot up in the second half.
It will be interesting, because I hypothesised that this has actually been our tactical approach. This is our new thing of just save ourselves for this little spell in the second half and what have you. And it'd be interesting if we do it again this week. It clearly is the plan. If we come out like a house on fire in the second half, then you'll know that that's clearly been, because that'll be four games on the bounce that we've tried that approach. And like I said, I don't mind. All I really want to see is a Liverpool side going for the win. Mm. You know, trying to go for the jugular, because when we do that, we look at an amazing football team. And what you don't want is, we talked about the Pulis stuff. I remember under Hodgson, we used to do it in the last 5 minutes of games, and we go, exactly. And you go, why can't we do this from the start? Is it because it's not a game plan under Hodgson? It's throw everything forward, whereas it does feel like a concerted effort. We've had these, we've looked amazing. And I did mention it might be to do with kicking towards our fans and what have you. Sam Allardyce is the type of prick who will make us kick towards the Annie Road end in the second half. So, you know, get a fucking attack in the cop in the field. I'm jealous. It's mainly a point because I like to see the goals in front of me when I'm in the cop. Fuck the Annie Road end, if I'm perfectly honest. So, yeah, whenever we're attacking the cop, let's score all our goals then, and I'll be absolutely fine.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Unless I'm in the Annie Road, then.
Well, yeah.
Which I don't know.
Well, you've got my ticket.
Have I? Mm. Oh, sad.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Laughing. Yeah. Laughing budgies.
So, yeah. We will move on. Let's go to get in the bin. Picking one thing from football culture to put in the bin and have it never return. Now, I wanted to throw in West Brom's drums, which I think automatically go in there. But I think given the... Obviously, we've just had the anniversary of Hillsborough, I think... And with the stuff of Everton Football Club finally getting on board with Liverpool Football Club and banning the sun from its grounds, I think you were rightly wanted to
I think that's it. You know, it should already be in the bin. I can't believe it's taken us 9 weeks to get there. But you know, mentally, I think the pair of us put it in the bin 20-odd years ago, 28 years ago. And look, you can't get away with what the Sun have gotten away with for so long. It's almost criminal that the Sun have been able to lambast this city and its people for so long without any comeuppance. And, you know, a fair play to the mayor of Liverpool in that he's actually got on board and got onto Twitter and started having a go. And he started a criminal case with the Merseyside police against him for racial slurs and stuff, because somebody's got to stand up to this rag of a newspaper, because it's been far too long. You know, we all know the Hillsborough connotations, but what they did against Ross Barkley is despicable.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely despicable. And it's not just Kelvin McKenzie. It can't just be Kelvin McKenzie. There's a sub-editor and an editor-in-chief there that should be getting put in the bin with Kelvin McKenzie and suspended. You know, it's very difficult, I'm sure, in a newspaper for a columnist who is supposed to be, you know, who's supposed to stand up there and put points of view out there that are going to get people talking. That's what columnists are there for. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I imagine it's difficult as an editor to stand up to your columnist, but you're there to do a job. Mm. And your job isn't to the columnist. Your job is ultimately to the people who buy your newspaper. And, you know, wherever
that is.
There's
got to be a certain degree of journalistic integrity, no matter what level, because we I don't know.
And research.
Well, research, yeah. But exactly. But that's the thing about it, is that people laugh. People talk about the journalist, mention the journalist's code and the code of conduct and the rules you have to agree to if you want to be a professional journalist. And it is, you have to tell the truth. You have to, you know, you've got a responsibility towards what you write and what you print and what have you. And people laugh. And people laugh because it's been made an absolute joke of by newspapers, especially like The Sun, who, you know, again, it's sensationalism first. It's looking to stir people up. And as you say, for me, it's moved beyond the Hillsborough stuff. It's just a terrible newspaper. And people can say, well, yeah, you know, look at the sport. The sport is like the Daily Sport. People outside of the country won't know, but the Daily Sport is like the National Enquirer or the Inquisitor. It's got that. It's almost parody.
Yeah.
It's almost a parody newspaper. It's that bad. Onion. It knows. Exactly. It's so close to being The Onion, it's untrue. But it's with The Sun, it shows no sense of irony in the way that it delivers stuff. And, you know, it's just, you know, poor research throughout it, making spurious accusations about people left, right and centre. And, you know, taking weird political stances along the way. Yeah, it's a terrible newspaper and it needs to get in the bin.
And as does McKenzie, and you know, the timing of that article on Barkley, he knows what he's doing.
Exactly, and I think that's the worst thing about him is that he's almost revels in this character he's created of himself. And the thing is that it's not even, the problem is it's not even really a character, it's just him. He's just a horrible piece of work. And he knows the game that he's playing, and that's even worse, because I think there's something about people who are just idiots, and people who are idiots, who are uninformed idiots, that are hard, and that you bang your head against the wall with them. But a lot of that's just you know, it's lack of education, it's upbringing, it's, you know, people are indoctrinated into a certain way of thinking. It's not always their fault. With him, calculated, he knows exactly what he's doing. That's what makes it worse. Look, he's a horrible, horrible human
regardless
being.
Regardless of what I think of the newspaper and the readers of that newspaper, there are a lot of readers, and he sways a lot of people with his views. And, well, you know, we're still recovering from that article in 1989 that was 4 days after, you know, the truth one.
Yeah.
We're still recovering from the slurs that he put against people then.
People hear something. People still take their opinions from headlines because people don't want to. A lot of people don't care to read the full story. They're not interested. They're just happy to be told an opinion and have it. And a lot of them, of course, don't realise that this is the way it is. But you're right. The problem is, is the problem with the Sun is that the vast majority of somebody, I'm sure the vast majority of somebody, isn't just nice people. You know what I mean? It's just because it's just a newspaper to a lot of people. But this is the thing, is they don't realise, because again, you don't care to scratch beneath the surface. It's just something, it's part of your daily life. The Sun is so entrenched in the culture of this country, which is, that's the only reason why it's still around. They've worked their way into people's daily lives. It's part of picking your red top up. That's what you do. It's part of the things that people just do in the routine lives, and that's why it's been so hard.
They've got some
nerve
calling it a newspaper anyway. Oh, exactly. Far from
it's a paper. But yeah, hopefully you've got. Obviously, Liverpool are on board with this. Everton are on board with it. The campaign is now pushing towards Celtic Football Club.
Yeah.
Wouldn't shock me to see them follow suit as well. And then, you know, I think it will spread from there. And I know there's some division on from people who are behind certain campaigns and what have you. And I know there's been an ongoing campaign since 1989 to get the Sun shut down. I think there are right ways and wrong ways of doing things. I think ultimately we've got to look at what the ambition is, and the ambition is to see that paper shut down, and whatever it takes, almost, it kind of doesn't matter. I would like to see everyone who wants to see that paper shut down get behind the cause, no matter who started or who's behind it or who's running it.
Yeah, well,
because if we get it shut down, then it will make this country a better place.
Yeah, well said.
Day
well
one.
Well said.
But yeah.
Drums as well.
West Brom. Terrible drums. At least they haven't got maybe they have got goal celebration music, but I don't think they have. But
I don't even mind the drums, but I feel like we should put it in there for you.
It's just clap your hands, bang your seats or whatever. Anyway, listen to questions. We've got so many questions this week, and so many of them are amazing.
I did just kick you.
Don't do loads, Paul.
It was a two-footer.
We'll start off with a general football one, actually. QDC football. Now that Chris Hughton got another team promoted, how long before the poor bloke gets turfed again? I give him 6 months.
What are we on now? April, I put it October. August, September, October. I'll go November 7.
Okay, sweet. Yeah. poor lad. He keeps having success in the championship. I was thinking this about Brighton coming up, and they've got some of the players that they've got who've obviously been at Premier League level before. There's one whose name it'll come back to me, former Palace centre forward. I can't remember his name at the moment, but there must be a mentality of Glenn Murray, that's it, where you
good
get
player.
To the Premier League.
He's
yeah, he's at the Championship, he'll score 20 goals a season in the Championship, but there's loads of strikers who do that. Dave Nugent is a great example of stuff like that. You go to the Premier League and you must be thinking, like, just be quiet, keep your head down, because any chairman with any sense would be like, mate, it's proven that you're not good enough to play at this level. Go and keep playing in the Championship. But he must be thinking, oh, God, just let me have another go. Let me have six months. Let me have a year. Let me get to January.
Is this Hughton or Murray?
This is both. but this is the thing. I think we've got Brighton squads chock full of that. And I was actually thinking about Newcastle as well, because Rafa's built an amazing Championship team there.
Still bottlers, but go ahead.
But maybe. But look at the players that they've got in there, you know, who it's built around. It's like, it's Matt Ritchie. It's another former Palace Bond, the one who always scores against us.
Yeah.
Again, these are guys who are absolutely smashing the Championship everywhere, but Rafa's not soft. Rafa, and again, these guys are all going to be there. And it does make you think, why do... a couple of clubs have done this recently. They got promoted and binned the manager off straight away. And it makes you wonder why more don't do it. Is there just too much... Too much nostalgia in the Championship, you know, like, oh, thanks very much, you've done such a great job. Like, nah, mate, you are a terrible you are a Championship level manager at best. Go and get someone else promoted. Maybe they'll be stupid enough to keep it in the job when you go up. Thanks for your time, ta-ra. Because poor old Chris they asked him on the radio last night, like, you know, since you last been there, obviously you've now got Guardiola and Klopp and Conte, you're looking forward to testing yourself against them. And he was like, yeah, really am. It's like, yeah, I bet you are, mate.
How many games against them do you think he'll play?
I bet you are. So yeah, poor old Chris Hughton. It's quite a fact, actually. We're going to go to our main question of the week, because it's obviously the title of the podcast. I want to make sure it gets plenty of time. The question was posed to us by Harshal B, who had two goes at sending this tweet, and he misspelled it and deleted it. So I had to wait around for you to send it back in again, but thanks very much, mate. Out of the six transfer targets, which are the ones that I mentioned on the news show this week on the YouTube channel, Sessegnon, Van Dijk, Brandt, Keita, Ox, Lacazette. Oh, actually, I didn't mention him. Who would you not want to miss out on at any cost?
So go through them again for us, mate. Sorry.
So, the ones that we... Lacazette wasn't mentioned, but you've got Ryan Sessegnon, Virgil van Dijk, Julian Brandt, Naby Keita, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. There was another one as well. Koulibaly, was it? I think was the other, was another centre half.
Not Tillemans.
Okay,
well, my answer, who would I not want to miss out on? It's Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I have question marks over the others whether they will perform at Liverpool. I think they're all great players, mm-hmm. and I think they all would suit Liverpool. But I just think that now, I think of it like, there's loads of good attacking players.
Yeah.
There's tons. You can still get value from attacking players from around Europe and stuff. I'm sure you can get value from centre-backs, but a really great centre-back who's head and shoulders above the rest of his peers, I think are few and far between.
When did that change? Because that's the converse logic that's always been true in football.
Because I think it's like last 3 years, centre-backs have been terrible, haven't they? You just have to look at Man City. You just have to look at Man City and the money that they've spent on centre-backs. They've probably spent close to 200 million on centre-backs in the last 4 or 5 years. And they've still got Vincent Kompany as their best centre-back, who's played five times this season or four times this season. I think, you know, ultimately, Liverpool need a goal scorer. We do need a goal scorer. We need a guy who can score 20 to 30 goals a season comfortably for us and against teams that we're expected to snot. But having a back door that's shut, you know, Mourinho has won league titles on, first of all, stopping people scoring goals and then going out and fixing the rest.
Exactly.
And I kind of want us to do that now.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing where we are, is that when you build the attacking thing first, pardon me, bogey. When you build the attacking thing, definitely we're checking the video out for. Wasn't on the hand.
It's on the floor down there.
It's gone now. We'll leave that to the Hoover. It's never getting hoovered.
God, it's going to grow.
When you build the attacking thing in first, it is very difficult to go back and build the defensive stuff because, we did it under Brendan Rodgers. We've never seen a manager do it that way. We've seen it happen the other way. Benitez did that. He built the defence first, exactly like Mourinho, and then added the attack on top.
Here's the thing, Paul. Whatever I think about how we need a striker, we are the top scoring side in the Premier League. We kind of just need to focus on the goals against.
This is exactly the point. I completely agree. It's why the Van Dijk thing, I think, is you're dead right. I think he is our number one target, and he should be, because why fix a problem that doesn't exist? You know, it would be lovely to have a 30 goal a season centre forward, but Do we really need one? No, of course we don't really need one. We're scoring goals for fun. What we probably need more in attacking sense is just to have the ability to not move other players from their best positions when we get injuries. So, like, let's not move Lallana ever from that position. All we need to do is, what you need is someone to replace Mane and or Coutinho and someone to replace Lallana. So these guys don't have to play 60 games a season, and or when they're injured, you can comfortably handle it without them. So I would say, in that regard, you're probably putting a Julian Brandt up there, because again, it allows us to continue. It's the thing. Do you want to better sustain what we do well, or fix an area that we need that needs fixing? Because I think there's. We could probably win a league title either way, to some extent, because you look at the points where we have dropped. Those games all occurred when we were either missing Mane, Coutinho, or Lallana, or all three. So we could have, you know what I mean? It's a tricky one. Again, it's Van Dijk.
Yeah,
I do totally agree. That would be a big message, because again, you're dead right. Look at Spurs and Chelsea on our day. I don't think they're that much better than us, but what is the difference? We've scored more goals than both of those teams, but we have, their goal difference is so much better than ours, and that's not because of the goals scored, it's because of the goals conceded.
It totally is. If I rank them, Paul,
Van Dijk number one for me. I would put, I don't know whether it's Julian Brandt or it's someone like that. Someone to play in the front three, mm-hmm. I will put as a second to that. I would have Naby Keita as my third one, and then Tiki pick beneath that. Naby Keita, for me, I've got a feeling that we will sign Van Dijk or whatever. You know, if we did that, I feel like Naby Keita's got the ability to be like an absolute Liverpool hero within his first 12 months. He's one of them where we go, okay, yeah, great, we signed him, brilliant, signed. You know, people aren't going to be doing cartwheels. There's not going to be people tipping ice buckets over their heads outside Melwood when he drives in, that kind of stuff. But this time next year, we'll be sat here going, oh my God, what a signing. What a player he has. He could have that transformative effect on our midfield, which would be very nice to see. What about yourself?
Funnily, I actually agree with you in the order that you've said as well.
Okay. Brilliant.
It's unusual.
And I just think someone like, because it's been mentioned, hasn't it, that Oxlade-Chamberlain would be a squad player, so fine. You know, yeah. if we buy him, great. If we don't, we'll probably buy someone else who does stuff along those lines.
But it's about his
but
place.
What a squad player he'd be.
That's it. Brandt makes a difference to the first team, I think, whereas Chamberlain makes a massive difference to squad depth.
Yeah, I think actually it's true for both of them. To be fair, I think neither of them necessarily starts the opening game of the season for us if we've got our best 11 in inverted commas fit. But when you're playing when you've got a Champions League qualifier after your first game of your season, and then you've got the second game of your season, it means that one of them comes in and plays that game, and we look just as good for whatever. So yeah,
and my fourth target of the summer. And it won't happen next season, but I'm thinking long term here is just get Mane to give up international football. just do it. Just start it
Shit
now.
Shit that, mate. Yeah.
Start it.
You're going to travel so far. You're not going to win anything.
It's terrible. You want to do it to yourself? Top break.
Yeah.
Top
I mean, if they get to a World Cup, let them have a World Cup. But after that,
oh, yeah, you can go to World Cup.
Absolutely fine. This African Cup of Nations, middle of the season, shit needs to go. And then, of course, what will happen is the World Cup will end up getting moved to mid-season. Hopefully he'll be old and won't play for us by that point. But yeah, just last thing, we didn't really mention him, but yeah, the Ryan Sessegnon thing, I really want him to be like he's a cherry on top kind of signing for me this summer. Someone like that, again, he's not going to play a mass amount of games if we signed him, but because he's so highly rated, that's another little message. Signing Van Dijk when everyone's after him, yeah, or buying another top player that everyone's after is a message. But again, signing that next great young player, particularly based in this country, I think would be a big win for him.
Hell of a win though that we've just discussed, wouldn't it?
Well, absolutely. But then
I think I think you're right in what you say. It's a cherry on top, but I also think it's a place that we need to secure. Whether we can get Sessegnon or not, I think that young left back is definitely a berth that needs to be filled this summer.
Absolutely. Alexa Vujic. So we didn't
Vujic.
Get
Vujic.
Yeah. Oh. Why?
Not Dave. Sister
Vujanic.
Oh, Vujanic. I was close.
I wasn't close.
You were close.
Just a couple of letters out. So I took some of these questions actually from last week's, because we didn't get too many on the Facebook this week, but we got loads last week and we didn't get a chance to. So anyway, Alexa Vujic. Jovanovic, happy birthday, by the way, for Tuesday. Or Markovic, who was worse? Taking Milan for a long time for this, yeah. Milan Jovanovic has all the hallmarks of when you played Chapman or Fuddyman, whatever, and you search through the free transfer list at the start, and you basically just go by names that you recognise.
He has
one of those names because it's got Milan in it. Like Milan Rapic, I think, was like a Croatian player. You'd always look at because the Milan thing makes you think, oh, maybe he's a good player. I recognise Milan are a good team. And he's got one of those names that makes him sound like he's probably a good footballer.
And then you click on his stats and go, no.
Yeah. We put it out on the Twitter. I was reminded of it because it's his birthday, again, on Tuesday. That line from Neighbours where he's one of the greatest soccer players in the world. Yeah, he wasn't. He was maybe one of the better Serbians, but no. No, poor old Lazar. Lazar's doing okay. No, he's not good enough to play for Liverpool, but he's doing okay.
He's a footballer at least.
He is definitely a footballer. Okay, Sean LFC says, do you think someone like Mahrez would be worth a punt? Hasn't had the best of seasons, but was unreal last season, and we will hopefully have Champions League. For me, 100%.
Yeah, I could fully get behind the Mahrez. Look, he struggled in this Leicester side this season, but then a lot of players struggled this season for Leicester. I think, you know, he's a guy who, I almost put him, well, he's ahead of them, but the guys we were talking about before, the Zahas, Yannick Bolasie is one of those type of players, Traore from Middlesbrough. You know, one of these guys.
Sorry, you're putting him in with Adama Traore.
He's better, I did say he's better than those.
Okay.
But what I mean is those tricky, fast players that can affect football games and just do it randomly. Yeah. And he's done that randomly this season.
he did it consistently last season,
yeah.
And he looks to me like a real confidence player. Mm-hmm. He's definitely a guy I'd take a punt on, even just to mix it up slightly from Mane.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what money you'd bandy around, but yeah, you've got to take a look at him. He is a winner at the end of the day. He's a Premier League winner.
He's one of them. I can't see it. He will massively regret having not moved in the summer. Mm. I think, I mean, ultimately, if they win the Champions League, then I think he'll be happy with the decision. But I don't think he'll be worth as much money this summer as he was last year. I'm not sure that the clubs who are in for him will necessarily be back in for him. Who knows what the situation at Arsenal is going to be like. He's great. There was a game the other week, and him and Vardy just turned it on. They decided they were going to go and win a football match, and they did. And the way he has the ability to go from stock still to pass two men and having a shot at goal, as you say, Mane is the only player we've got. Mo Coutinho can do it, but you know, I think I put him in that bracket with those. I think he's as good as both of those players. And we talk about Julian Brandt, great. He is a gamble. You know, he's still young. Can he do it in the Premier League? Well, there you go. Mahrez is absolutely prime of his career age. He's what we keep talking about. He is the profile of the kind of players that we would all like to see Liverpool targeting. He's not going to cost you £60 million. Mm. And he would be good. I would love to see us make a move for him in the summer. Brian Savage 9. Is Genie our best midfielder since Stevie?
Quite for me.
No. I'd say saying that, who is?
Lallana.
Good shout. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, to be fair as well, and it's tough because he's been out for a few weeks and we've almost forgotten about Jordan Henderson to some extent. But Jordan Henderson's terrific, isn't he? So yeah, I think we could. The problem is, of course, is that that's still, he's only asking best since. He's not saying you don't have to be anywhere near as good as Steven Gerrard, I guess, to fill the quota on that. But I'll take Lallana for that one. Good. Here we go. James Bolton, Bolty 1991. Would you take Defoe in the summer as a backup? It's been something that Ped's been banging around on Social Club for a while about how someone like a Man City could have done worse than take a go at Jermaine Defoe because he's one of them. You bang him in the team and he'll score some goals for you. I think it is at mid-30s with no physical attributes whatsoever. I can't see him having any impact for Liverpool. But if he was to replace Daniel Sturridge as our third or fourth choice centre-forward...
Before the Euros, I'd have said no chance whatsoever. I mean, I remember doing a ball seat show and I argued that that's a ridiculous thing that you'd even try and consider taking him to the Euros. Mm-hmm. After seeing him again this season, I've got to say, yeah, mm-hmm. I think I would take a chance on him. I think, look, he's not going to be on massive amounts of wages, is he? I think, you know, you don't really know what type of Danny Ings is going to come back yet. Sturridge is probably likely to go. He's an experienced footballer. He knows where the goal is. And he's good when you get the ball in the box to him. And we get the ball in the box to our strikers a lot. It's about, do they get the shots off well enough? I just think, yeah, ultimately, I think he finds space. He knows where the goal is. He knows how to finish the ball. He doesn't rush his shots. Good player, man.
Look at what we've done with... how Daniel Sturridge worked against Stoke, not how he didn't work against West Brom. But you're right. One of those games where you've got 20 minutes left in a football match and you just need someone to put the ball in the back of the net, you could do a lot worse than that. And you consider, pardon me, I think it would a lot of this would I would be underwhelmed if we didn't sign someone else. And again, almost like the Ricky Lambert thing. The Ricky Lambert signing makes sense if you buy two more top quality forwards around him and he goes in as your fourth choice. What you would need to be clear on that is people would be upset if we replaced Daniel Sturridge with Jermaine Defoe in a general sense. But if you looked at our pecking order, if it was Firmino, Origi, another boss player, and then Jermaine Defoe,
rounds out nicely, actually.
Exactly, be sound with that. And what you're doing is, effectively, although you don't know how well this works out, but you're making money. You're making good money, and I know people don't like us making money, but you are taking £15 million for Daniel Sturridge. Say you're probably paying £5 million, you're probably paying maybe even less for Jermaine Defoe. You're paying buttons for him, aren't you? And you are definitely adding someone who could at least score, who has the potential to score as many goals as Daniel Sturridge. If you base it on this season, there's no guarantee Daniel Sturridge will ever score consistently again in the Premier League, whereas Defoe's a few years older and still doing it. So maybe. Again, our last transfer. If we signed him as our last signing, we got him at the end of July or something like that.
He was our ninth signing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd take that. Okay. Le Otner on Facebook. Random question for you. Pineapple on a pizza, yay or nay?
Yeah, I like pineapple on a pizza.
100%. I'm all in on pineapple on a pizza.
It's probably tomato's technically a fruit, but it's not, is it? Let's be honest. Mm. It's probably the only fruit that I would find acceptable on a pizza.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You wouldn't put apple on there, would you?
You wouldn't put apple on a pizza. You wouldn't put orange on a pizza. You wouldn't put banana on a pizza. Let's go through all the fruits.
Jackfruit. You wouldn't put jackfruit
Sultanas.
On a pizza. No, probably not.
Strawberries on a Nutella pizza.
Strawberries on a Nutella pizza, shouts Tom. Fantastic.
It's a very, shot. Very good shot.
Yeah,
actually.
I know. I have pineapple on my pizza choice. I like to.
I can't believe it's such a topic that really winds people up. This pineapple on a pizza thing. I've seen it on Facebook. Like Facebook Lives about it. Like with 20,000 people watching live about this.
We missed a window here, haven't we? But thanks very much for the question. Yeah, I'm a fan of spicy pizzas, but I like to balance it out with a bit of the sweetness of pineapple. So yeah, absolutely. Pam and pineapple's a bit. Yeah.
What's your favourite pizza topping?
Individually,
mm-hmm.
Favourite individual pizza topping.
Yeah,
cheese.
Okay, that's part of the pizza. I mean, you can have extra cheese as your topping if you want, but ultimately a pizza is cheese, tomato, and base.
Yeah.
So go.
Okay. Spicy beef.
Okay, fair enough. Wrong answer. It's not spicy beef. It's almost the worst meat you can put on a pizza because it's not really meat. It's shit.
Corn.
It's shit. It's like, do you know that fake chicken in a chicken and mushroom pot noodle?
Yeah.
That's what spicy beef is to beef.
Okay. So what's your answer?
Andouille sausage.
Get lost. So, what is it?
It's an Italian
where
sausage
they sell it?
That's almost spreadable in Italian delicatessens or whatever Italian that is. So it's actually defined as a spreadable sausage, and it's hell spicy.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, spicy beef.
So essentially, you're having a pate pizza.
No. No.
It's
not a sausage, is it?
No, but it's like a pate.
No. It's a spreadable sausage.
It's a spreadable sausage.
It's completely different.
Sausage pate?
No.
Sausage spread?
No.
It's sausage spread?
No, it's not.
You're having a sausage spread?
No, it's spreadable sausage.
Why is it not sausage spread?
Because it's wrong way round.
Lolly ice?
No.
Okay. Here's a good question, actually. In fact, it is more of a serious one to get us back on track. At Stroke Matip on Twitter.
Stroke Matip?
Mm. Do you reckon more people should get the opportunity for season tickets rather than people renewing to sell them to someone else?
Nah.
Right, immediately no, because that's how I get a season ticket. But there is something I was thinking about this the other day about almost like a season ticket amnesty, that it would be nice to get some fresh blood in there. It must be massively frustrating. I was going to the point where I'm not on the season ticket list. I'm not, because they're not taking any more new submissions for it, so it doesn't impact me in the same way. But if I was like a few hundred away from getting one, that would do my head in. Absolutely.
I don't think so. I mean, I can see why it would do your head in and stuff. In answer to the question, I don't think it should be opened up every season for people to sign up for a season ticket. I just don't think it's like that. It's first come, first served, ultimately.
No, but what he's talking about is the people who have them and sell them on. Is that that's surely not right?
It's not right, but it's exactly what I'd do if I had a season ticket and I couldn't make it. Like, you know, the guy...
You wouldn't give it up.
No, yeah, why would you? Because you don't know. A lot of it's down to your finances changing or your job change, or you might have to move somewhere else or something like that. You don't know when that's going to change again. You can get back into your ticket. You're not going to give it up and go, well, I'll just get back on the waiting list for 18 years.
I think the problem with that is that, I agree with that. That's why there's no black and white on this, because I remember my uncle had a season ticket and fucking give it up like a divvy. And my dad was raging with him because he never talking about it because they've got another brother who had to go and get a season ticket, and he had to work his way around to get to the point where he could then move back next to me dad, and that would have been solved by keeping it within the family like you're meant to. So I don't mind the keeping it in the family stuff, pass it down from generation to generation, because why would I'm too old to go, oh well, sorry, fuck you son, you're gonna have to wait 15 years 20 years to get a season ticket. What the problem is not that. It's I think it's the managed season tickets are the problem, and I think it's the people who own them who buy them up almost to keep them, and they're the ones who are selling the tickets on for over face value and whatever the little industry that's got around it, which is not as good a thing, because they're actually the people who are letting people into the games who, you know, who have got control over letting randoms in who maybe don't necessarily appreciate it or whatever. I would like to see, and again, it's impossible. It would be impossible to manage that. It would be impossible to know who that was. But if you could get back to a world where you've got someone who's, you know, who can take that ticket at face value and goes there and adds to the atmosphere week in, week out, then that would be a situation I think would be beneficial. I just don't see how it's possible to make that a thing. Actually, we've got a few more questions, but there's something else that came up last week. And while it's still in theme, I want you to take, I've printed these two sheets off for you here, Chris. So last week, Julian Pepper sent in best Easter-themed player names. Oh, my word. I'll start with Vegard Egham, which I thought was a very good start. So we'll work our way through these.
Dave McCluskey, Simon Mini-Eggs.
That's all right. Dominic Charters Cup with John Arnett Rise. Sonny Hippie, no. Patrick Becher, no. Carl Heinz Cream. I mean, if you said Carl Heinz Creamer.
Wow.
Carl Heinz Cream Egg, I think, works a little bit better. At least it sort of fits with it. Go on, Stephen Beerman.
Cun Aguero.
Aguero.
Egan Hazard.
Egan Hazard's a good one.
Gabriel Jesus is a pun all by itself.
Not really. Ian Lester, Barry Venison, because we have deer at Easter and Easter eggs are deer. No.
Chris Fletcher, you all forgot what creature lays eggs? A chicken. And chickens are fowl. Must be Robbie Fowler.
No.
This one, I actually like that. I quite like the next one.
Okay, Stuart Parkinson, Rafa Benitez. Yeah, I'm up for that. That's
John brilliant. Dunn, Easter theme names. Oh, I don't know. Maybe Jesus. Bob McBride, Daniel Egger.
Sound. Dwight Yorkie.
Christopher McCourt. Messi.
No. What?
Just says Messi.
Rocky Santa Crucifixion.
Peter Ford says, Momo, this Coco. Sorry, that was shite. And he said that, not me.
He said that himself. Emre Can, I have a Thornton's egg.
Jesus. Peggy R. Fix egg.
See, but he's missed a big one here. Jack Griffiths.
He's got egg in Peggy.
So Peggy R. Fix it. So move, go two down from Liam Wright.
Peg. Peggy Fix Egg.
So yeah, exactly. You already had the egg in there. That works better as a visual gag rather than an auditory one. David, I couldn't catch an egg, James. No, sorry, Andrew.
Paul
Belson.
Allen. Abel Xavier.
Xavier! That's a good one. I like that. Mark Crossley. Okay, yeah.
Mark Cross bonus, I get it then, yeah.
No.
Nick Selby. Emil Egski.
Egski, fine. Jermaine Easter. Yeah. Philip De Egg.
Right, this is one of the worst. Brian Munching, Robert Lewandowski,
Maxi Rodriguez,
John Sankley, Stanfield, Eagle, Ego Biscan.
That's fair. Ovum Ajaria. I mean, it's not. Is it Easter themed? Is an ovum an Easter?
Let's just get through this. Lewis Allen, Jamie Carragher.
Carragher, yeah, sound. Aurelio, he had a great cross. Andrew Lewis, no. No. Okay, let's...
And people complained at me for playing FIFA and not taking 3 minutes out of their life.
That was great. We're going to wrap the podcast up there. If you've got more questions from you...
Is this another Easter thing? Because you wrap an egg. No. Terrible.
If you want more of your questions, we've got some great ones still to come. There's one about if we got
some more excellent questions coming up, Paul. No.
Miles Tarbox's question about if we had all access passes to Anfield Mel, wouldn't the players staff for a day? What videos would we want to make? We'll be answering that in a moment. Other than Anfield, what's the best ground we've visited and best away? That's from Anfield Pyro and Deadly Coutinho as well. Is our squad good enough for Champions League? From Manny Mayhem. Should we go all in on Aubameyang? From Aaron Ahern. And a couple others as well. So yeah, if you're watching video form, stay tuned. If you're not, if you're just listening in your ears, with your ears, then yeah, and you want more, go over to theredmentv.com and sign up completely. And
while you're listening with your ears, use your fingers to write a review on iTunes again, of course, please.
Absolutely. But yeah, come over to theredmentv.com, sign up and watch the full video version. We're going to get stuck into it right now. Thanks very much, podcasters, and we'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.